You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Dog Pound, check out the all-new BrownsCast podcast. Cleveland Browns are given Max Linsky, the host of the show, complete access to the organization. Max interviews players, coaches, and some less familiar figures who play an integral role in managing the day-to-day business of the organization. It's a whole new way to learn about the Browns. Visit clevelandbrowns.com, the Browns mobile app, or download BrownsCast from the iTunes store right now. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm, 216-578-0850. Johnny Manziel starting for the Cleveland Browns. You can tweet us. You can call us at 216, like I said, 570-0850. Here's what's coming in on Twitter right now. G.I. George says, win, lose, or tie, now that Manziel's behind center, you keep him there. It's a tryout for the rest of the season. Valley Joe, Joe Kovac says, don't see how McCown plays again, win or lose. Win and Johnny is 2-0 on the year. Lose and it's full evaluation mode at 2-7. If Johnny plays well tomorrow, will we see him going forward? We should. At what point does the season become a waste in the eyes of Mike Pettine? So most people so far believe that you should have Johnny Manziel going the rest of the way. I believe that as well. Josh McCown has done all that he can for this team on the field. It has not translated to wins. It is not his fault.
Right.
But I want to see what Johnny Manziel can do.
And if we go back to, you know, the months of May, June, and July, just watching Josh McCown in practice, and at that point, you could potentially say there was some type of competition between Johnny Manziel and Josh McCown throughout OTAs and mini camps. But then it became very clear that Josh McCown was light years ahead of Johnny Manziel. And so what you was, and we started talking about, well, what if Johnny Manziel became the starter and the opening day starter throughout training camp and wins that battle? Josh McCown's comments when he came here was, you know, I'm ready to play whatever role I need to play for the Cleveland Browns. And at this point right now, it's be one play away, and thank you so much for your service. But as a franchise at 2-6, we really have to understand what we're getting in this guy.
Absolutely. And here's what head coach Mike Pettine said to Albert Breer yesterday. I just retweeted the link. He just published his story. He was here in Berea yesterday, spent some time with Mike Pettine last night, and they dove deep on Johnny Manziel. And here's what he said. Last year, I would have said to you, I have no idea where this guy is going to be a year from now. And if I were to handicap it, maybe be 50-50 with this guy, and that'd be generous. This year, I'm a lot more confident that if you surround him with the right people, he can be successful. He said there are very few quarterbacks in this league, in the history of the league, where no matter who you put around them, they'll be successful. Brady, Manning, Breeze, Rodgers, there's a handful. The next tier of quarterbacks will be very supporting, cast dependent, and that's where he thinks that Manziel can and will be. He said for him, about Manziel, it always comes back to his feet. They have done a great job. They've drilled on his footwork in the spring, etc. And he's also learned things. I don't have to turn every play into a punt return. That was a function of two things. One, that's what he was used to doing. And two, when you don't know what a defense is in and you're not sure where you should go with the ball, you extend the play until you know what you're going to do. Now he's confident. He knows he can process quick, get the ball out, and that's what you want. So he feels very comfortable with Johnny Manziel. Stan, to talk to us now about Johnny Manziel.
Hello, how are you, Nathan?
Stan, it was nice to meet you on Dog Pound Drive on Sunday.
Seriously, you know, I appreciate that. I had an excellent conversation with down there at the Hard Rock with Munch.
Nice.
He spent 15 minutes with me talking to me, and I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure, okay? Of course.
I left at the end of the third quarter on Sunday. I took my cane and walked out, and I heard about the Ken Carmen comment. There goes Stan the man, limping in. I limp back out. But in regards to Johnny, okay, I'm going to bring out a point, a couple of different points. I'm very observant, all right? Number one, you must not mold Johnny into something he's not, okay? You got to let him play his game, okay? It's just like Bernie Kosar. He threw sidearm quite a bit, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and he had the strength. We need to build a game plan around him, his short and intermediate passes in the pocket are not going to happen at large percentages of the time because he's short. You can't look over those defenders.
Well, neither can Drew Brees or Russell Wilson.
I know that, but I'm just saying is that you got to let him. Don't try to mold him into something he's not. And the other thing about Josh McCown, the other thing I really want to say, my condolences go out to Dino and his family.
Yes.
I really felt bad about
that. Thank you for
that, Stan. Okay. I really do.
All right.
But, you know, I really appreciate you taking my call.
You've got it, Stan. Thank you so much for the phone call. I feel that with what I've seen from Johnny this year, you don't have to change the game plan all that much. Clearly, when you look at the fact that Josh has put it in the air about 50 times and that Johnny threw it 15 times, there was some adjustment. But you remember the flow of that game. You're up 21-7 early, and you wanted to control the clock against an inferior opponent in the Tennessee Titans. That's not going to be the case against Cincinnati. He's going to have to throw it, and he's going to have to throw it effectively.
Absolutely. And oh, by the way, they've got two guys, Carlos Dunlap, at 6.5 sacks, he's tied for fifth in the National Football League. And you've got Geno Atkins with 5 sacks a game. So they're deep. And
oh, their defensive front is excellent.
And that's going to be the key. That's going to be the key. And Michael Jackson has 2 sacks as well. And the key factor is going to be this is a similar situation in that 4-3 defense where they're going to bring 4, and those guys are going to be disruptors. They're going to get to the quarterback. They're going to knock him down. They're going to deviate him out of the pocket. And he's going to have to find those windows in the zone coverage with 7 droppers, with 6 droppers consistently, or understand the pre-snap reads. And that's something that we have all seen from Johnny. But going back really quickly, just to stay on the Johnny topic, the one thing that jumped out to me about Mike Pettine's comments to Albert Breer about Johnny Manziel is surround him with playmakers. Johnny Manziel is a playmaker, but he can't do everything, okay? Especially not this I guess, premature/immature in his NFL career, especially from a starting standpoint. And when does that start? Because as much as you like to have Travis Benjamin stay here as a Brown who wants to be a Brown, he's a number 2 wide receiver, you know, in the National Football League. And Barnage is a guy who's playing out of his mind. You'd hope to retain him. But can he didn't do it for 7 years, but he's doing it in his 8th. Can he continue to do that moving forward and be the playmaker in this offense? But you got to go out and
you hope Josh Gordon comes back.
Right, and acquire talent.
In the draft.
In the draft around Johnny Manziel so they grow together.
Yep.
As an offense. And then I think you've got a great offensive coordinator in John DeFilippo, and you're taking baby steps in the right direction. You can't throw Johnny out there with no playmakers because Johnny's the only playmaker.
That is 100% the case. Here's a quote also from Mike Pettine with Albert Breer that I found very, very interesting. Last year when he went out there, he was seeing 13 or 14 guys on defense. He's so much calmer this year because I think he gets it. Flip can start a play call, and he can finish it. He knows the call sheet that well. He knows this certain route. Hey, if I get cover one, I'm going to work this side. If I get quarters, I'm going to work here. And a lot of that is how he's being coached and how that room pulls each other along. He has benefited from that massively. We've been very pleased.
And that's what happens.
And let me just say, the scary thing means that they were starting him last year when he couldn't finish play calls, when he didn't know what play calls were. He didn't know where to go with the football against certain coverages. And I would take that back and say there were 2 factors. One, we know it was a very divisive quarterback room a year ago, and we know that he got poor coaching, or it certainly seems that he got poor coaching from Dow Loggins. This year, he's getting excellent coaching from Kevin O'Connell, and even having Flip, who was a quarterback coach by trade before being an offensive coordinator, I think has helped him. And having Josh McCown not trying to compete with Johnny but trying to help Johnny and help this organization has been incredibly helpful as well.
I agree. I really agree. And I think it's that going back this offseason and hiring Kevin O'Connell, who technically wasn't even available, you know, because he was still training Marcus Mariota to get ready for the draft and other draft prospects, but to bring him in as a young guy who's relatable, who has spent time with Johnny Manziel in the past, you've got a young coordinator, up-and-comer in John DeFilippo, and as I mentioned, just as Johnny would grow with his playmakers as the franchise quarterback here, he now has guys that you hope are here with him as well, grooming each other, and you have the type of conversations that Josh McDaniels has with Tom Brady, you know, after years and years, and they can probably finish each other's sentences, or Tom Brady can probably call the game the way, you know, McDaniels calls the game. And that's a situation where even for myself, when I got comfortable, it got to the point where you didn't have to have the coach in some cases we signaled in and we used the headset, he'd start the sentence and it's just like you just turn your head away from the sideline and it's like it was like, you know, ambient noise because you finished the call. Or he'd give you an abbreviated signal because you knew what it meant. It was right. Like you were fully engulfed in that offense or defense that you knew exactly what you knew exactly the mindset of why we're running this play on this down and distance because you did the same thing on Wednesday in your first and second down prep that, hey, when we're in second and seven plus after a run, this is how we're going to attack the Cincinnati Bengals.
How long did it take you to get to that point?
2 years.
2 years.
2 years.
As a linebacker.
Yeah. And mind you.
And it, would you say that it is a bigger learning burden for a quarterback?
100%. Okay. And that's the point I was just going to say. And a defensive call is five words at most. Usually it's three words. It's the front, it's the coverage, and it's a stunt. Whereas an offense is you're telling everybody what to do in probably not the 17 words like Kyle Shanahan, but 10.
And as a linebacker, would it be true that more often than not, you need to know your responsibility and really that's what you know, that's what you're focused on, what your responsibility is on a given play, whereas the quarterback needs to know the responsibility of everybody on the offense, what routes every single player is running, the protection, what the running back, everything.
Well, as a linebacker, I mean, you're in the mix. You gotta know who's aligned in front of you and where they're aligned and where they're going on a specific stunt, zone blitz, or pressure. And you gotta understand, you know, the fits and the communication with guys behind you. So as a linebacker, everything really came full circle for me when I understood not only what I need to do, but when I could go up on the board and draw up a defense and against a certain coverage or against a certain run, and I could fit everybody up. And that's what really clicked for me. And I think that's what we saw this year. And all it simply took was the right coaches that taught, and I mentioned this before, that taught Johnny Manziel how to learn the pro game, how to study the film, how to study yourself, you know, how to see what Josh McCown sees in 13 years of experience. That's what Johnny Manziel's getting, and that's why I think he's much more ahead of the curve this year than he was last year as a rookie.
You look at him, and he does look more calm out there. There's one thing he does that drives me nuts, though. When he gets to the top of his drop, he stands completely flat-footed, and it drives me completely insane. That's what Dante Culpepper used to do it, and they do it, I believe, because they feel very stable in their base, and they know with their quick twitch, nobody has any idea where their next movement is going to be, and right. They can get out of harm's way. But I want to see him keep those feet active so that if his first read's not there, he can bounce back to the other side of the field quickly.
See, and that's where a good coach will refer you to another player that does that very well. And I think if you watch Aaron Rodgers, maybe not, you know, Monday night or Sunday night against the Broncos, but his feet and John Gruden talking about his feet and constantly moving and moving and moving and how it allows him and gives him the opportunity to throw the football anywhere down the field and not simply be, you know, only work one side of the field. He's the best in the business right now with those active feet. And a guy that I think Johnny Manziel should emulate where it starts in the pocket and then you can deviate, still looking to throw and run as last and not essentially second or first.
Absolutely. Let's get Terry in Cleveland now. Terry, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks.
Once again,
Manziel's play, skill level, and his work ethic haven't earned him anything. They've got no choice but to run him out there. And Pettin covered his you-know-what by he made sure that he ran the count out there until he literally was broken in half. So he can now say, look, I've got to play Johnny. They never wanted to play Johnny. Johnny is miles behind his peers, okay? And he...
Can I ask you a question, though? Is it a surprise to you that he's miles behind his peers when Derek Carr has started 20 games, Teddy Bridgewater started 20 games, Blake Bortles has started 20 games, and Johnny Manziel started now three?
Right. He couldn't do what they did. They're starters in the NFL. He's a backup behind the 36-year-old grandpa. Exactly. That's my point. He's not on their level. He's not on a level of a starting quarterback, period. With any team.
Well, Teddy Bridgewater started off his season behind Matt Cassel and then ascended to the role when Matt Cassel performed poorly and was injured. Blake Bortles started off the season behind Chad Henne and then came into the role as Chad Henne struggled. And in Oakland, Matt Schaub was so bad that they decided to go with Derek Carr right away. My point is, if you go back and look at those guys, where they started as starters and where they were after six games as starters were vastly different. And in the case of Carr and Bortles, it took even a little bit longer than that. They've made significant progress here in their second season. Teddy was the quickest learner of the bunch. I always thought, and I always said, You know, I was a Teddy Bridgewater guy. I thought he had the easiest transition in the NFL, and I think everything has borne that out from these guys. But to say that Johnny Manziel doesn't have talent is foolish, and to also say that he had anything other than the longest and most difficult transition to the NFL would be inaccurate as well. I don't know if Johnny Manziel is going to be an NFL quarterback, but I know what he did at Texas A&M did not in any way, shape, or form prepare him to be an NFL quarterback. And so he's learning on the go, and it seems like last year he was not in a productive environment in the quarterback room and was not getting good coaching. This year he is in a productive environment and is getting good coaching, and now it's going to be on to him. It's going to be on to Johnny Manziel and on Johnny Manziel to show that he either has the requisite skill to make those decisions from the pocket and win in the NFL, or he won't. And the Browns will move on next year and draft somebody, whether it be a Paxton Lynch or a Jared Goff, in the draft.
Yeah, and I think that the template that Josh McCown has played with and through this year is something that Johnny should emulate. Their games aren't the same, but you can't deny that Josh McCown has had success in this offense as the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. And I would hope that Johnny Manziel would want to duplicate that, but add the wrinkle of the playmaker with his feet and how dynamic of a playmaker he is as Johnny Manziel. Yep. I don't want Johnny Manziel to go out there and feel like he has to do everything, because we can't run the football and
we've got to run it this week.
Right. We have to run it this week. It's huge, because for Johnny Manziel to drop back pass and throw it 30 plus times, it's going to look a lot like it did here at First Energy Stadium against the Bengals.
Yes, it will. All right. When we come back, we're going to hear from General Manager Ray Farmer, part one of his presser from yesterday. For those who missed it, you'll now have an opportunity to hear it in its entirety. Part one of that press conference when we return on Cleveland Browns Daily.